Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted,
the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 53 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. So announcements this week, it was announced that the third episode of the Stars Outlander series was the show's most watched yet in same-day ratings. They had 1 million viewers.
So that's good, and we hope that it just continues to grow.
It is. It's good because it's, instead of like some shows where there's a really big start and then it kind of tapers, This is, I feel like this is doing the complete opposite.
And this is not including anyone watching Double E or watching through, it could be on, an app would still be later, right? Because they're not going to make that episode available. This is watching
it said same day viewing.
Okay, same day viewing. So it could have been later, or someone watched it on the DVR later on, or could have been "quote unquote" live, or as it's aired. But it doesn't matter. It's great numbers.
We're huge fans of that. Anything that Stars needs to keep the show going for as long as possible is all that I really want.
All the books.
All of them.
All the laws.
Oh my god! Could we have a shirt that just says "all the books"?
Yeah.
All the books, Stars. Looks like Japan now has Outlander.
I think it's available on Hulu as of today.
Oh, that's so cool. They get to watch it on Hulu.
That would be pretty nice. That's pretty cool. Both them and New Zealand have had it streaming. On their start date, has been streaming.
It almost feels like they're getting it kind of like Netflix, where they get almost the entire season.
Yeah.
Now, granted, it's only the episodes that have aired so far.
Yeah.
So they're not getting like the whole season in one day, but...
Yeah.
But still, to have it start up and be like, oh my gosh, I have all four episodes! It's got to be pretty exciting. Because it's good for binge watching. Outlander posted a video today, sort of behind the scenes of Diana Gabaldon visiting the Outlander set.
Mm-hmm, her tour.
And it was...
Of Outlander World, they called it.
I just love how excited she is to see it. I mean, can you imagine
what
that must be like to have created this world and basically sign off when these people come and say,
yeah,
we want to build it for you. We want to make this. We want to make it. And then show up and see... And see the things that were in your brain that you put on paper. I just can't even.
Oh, so cool. I can't even for a long time. Or I haven't been able to can even for a long time.
The feels. We got a new newsletter. Like I said, it looks like Saturdays. It's going to be Newsletter Saturday. And this one was entitled... Well, it's all about them. I don't have the email up. The email says it's all about something about the Mackenzie.
I think so.
But, it's a nice little thing. There's a little focus on, obviously, Dougal and Colm. And then there's, you know, little Angus and Rupert down there. So it's just more great information, stuff that we maybe didn't know. And it looks like this week they are pushing the glassware from Outlander store.
I remember seeing them at the bottom of last week.
Oh,
those beautiful.
Last week it was the taller glasses.
Okay.
And this week it's all of them. It's got the wine glasses.
We may have to visit the online Outlander store.
My birthday is like a week and a half away. There was another Ask Outlander Q&A on Twitter with the co-executive producer, Meryl Davis. She's always so fun and just responsive. And
she
was doing these long before they became official.
Oh, yeah.
So
she helped us get through the production phase before the pre-show, I guess you could say. Put it this way, Stars, your pre-show was like almost a year long. That's the best and longest pre-show of anything in the history of anything.
Well, and she's so unassuming. Like,
she's just a fangirl. And
I know,
she
but,
was the first to say that.
But
and
like, for instance,
very nice.
when we were at the carpet... And she just kind of walked down the carpet like no one was going to notice her. And she was just going to traipse on in. And we were like, Meryl! And we stopped her and called her over. And she's came over and talked to us for a good long time. But it was like, she just couldn't fathom that anyone would want to talk to her. So I just love that.
Well, she's
that
she modest. She was hoping to kind of...
Well, there's that too. But she's just so modest and humble. And I just love her. We got some new photos.
Quite a few. Like four.
From the Outlander Instagram
account. And I could
have
missed one.
some behind-the-scenes shots from the episode. This is from the Tinchel, where she is looking to avoid a boar, it looks like. And by her, I mean Claire.
Being bored by a boar.
There you go. Gored by a boar.
Gored, or that's better.
Bored would mean she's like,
No, to bore through something.
Oh, that too. It'll work. But I couldn't imagine a boar doing that.
Oh, well, no, but the point is, it could work.
She made a circular motion, a circular motion with her finger to indicate, like, drilling something. And I was like, I can't imagine a boar, like, being still and, like, drilling their tusks into somebody.
No, they can't flip their bodies around.
That's my point.
The point is, but gored bored by a boar. Okay, go on.
We also got a picture. I think this is actually from the previous episode. Yeah, it was on their Woman Crush Wednesday. Yeah. And she's holding that Lily of the Valley leaf in her hand.
The fake
wood
garlic.
Yes.
The non-wood garlic.
The poisonous wood garlic.
The poisonous non-wood garlic.
Right. Another great shot from that episode. We got another Hey Lassie. Oh, the Hey Lassies. I love them. This one made me laugh because it's got Jamie kind of with his head cocked to the side. And he's like, Hey Lassie, are you a time traveler? Because I see you in my future.
I mean, this is, it's
like,
cute.
It's...
They're like doing they're
combining
cute.
Two of my favorite things, Sam Heughan and
Ryan Gosling,
and cheesy pickup lines.
Oh,
like super cheesy, like the kinds where
she does.
Where
like
if somebody
Ryan Gosling,
actually
though.
Said this to you, you'd be like, "Oh, buy me a drink. Go ahead. That's awful. You deserve to buy me a drink for doing that." We also got a shot of some coos,
some kine.
Yes, kine
and coos.
Coos. They're so... This one looks like a baby. Like, he's, like, doesn't even have horns. It's just, like, this
it's
little...
It's like, so, he was in the middle of eating, and someone went to take a picture, and he was like, huh?
Well, you did this totally. Well, we were at
he's totally got it. All the hay in his mouth.
And they had a Highland cow at
coo.
The...
Coo.
Coo. At the games out in Pleasanton today, and this thing, this poor, poor cow, was just like...
No,
he looked so hot.
He did. It was warm today.
Like, he had horns that I swear to you were like 4 feet across.
3 feet across.
They were huge.
It was
and
big.
He was just sitting there like, are you kidding me? You brought me here. Do you not know that
at
in
least
Scotland
he had
it's
shade.
Generally so much colder?
That's true.
I have too much hair.
Although he was not
but
shiny.
But they... There's something... It's to me, it's like Highland cows are like a mixture of a cow and a teddy bear.
Yeah, oh, totally.
It just looks so cuddly with
but
all that extra
It may not
hair.
Be safe, but...
Oh, I don't recommend... I am not recommending cuddling with a Highland cow, unless you're well acquainted with this cow.
Well, probably never, but...
So I guess just don't. Full stop.
Mm-hmm.
And we would also like to announce that we are now available for listening through Stitcher. We had some people requesting a while ago, or not requesting, but asking us... If we would be available on Stitcher, that they like that format, and we are now available on Stitcher.
And it was, yes, it was very funny. Basically, Stitcher told you guys before they told us.
Well, I don't know if anyone knows how this whole thing goes, but you basically apply for it.
You tell them about your content,
why they should have you on their app. And then basically... You get nothing. Like, I assume
they
get, like, a confirmation email.
Well, and they did.
After
about 4 days later. No, but the funny thing was, they announced it on Twitter without letting us know that we were already on.
And that's how we found out we were on Stitcher.
And that's how
It
just was a nice big surprise for all of us together.
I know. So, one more way to listen. So, that makes it, we have the Audioboo app. We can listen on our website. You can listen on the Audioboo website.
Mm-hmm.
You can listen on iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
And you can listen
on your iPod if you subscribe through iTunes and get it down. And there are other,
from what I understand.
Now.
But there's some other podcasts, like capturing. Like,
yeah.
There's other apps that pull podcasts. So there are many ways that even I don't know. But those are the ones we know of.
Those are the most popular, I guess, those are the most popular ways and most, I don't say most traditional, but. The most popular ways. And if you have a way that we don't know of that you're listening to us, please let us know, because we have on our website, we're coming into the future now, or I guess coming up into the now finally. We've added a few more pages and we're organizing episodes by our discussion of the Star Series episodes, by our read-along episodes, which is the next step. And we have finished archiving our interviews thus far on a page under episodes interviews. So, look for that. And anyway, one of the pages is called Ways to Listen, and it lists all of this and maybe one or two more in case we forgot. But if you are listening in a new way or in a way that we have not mentioned or we haven't really promoted, please let us know, because we'd like to give a shout out to that one that way as well. And heck, that website.
I just like to know where else I'm available.
Where we are. Let us know where we are, please, because sometimes I really don't know. Because today, my hashtag was all the whiskey.
Oh, okay. I know we weren't really doing this.
No, and we don't have a lot of time.
We don't, so we have but to do I do want to say this very quickly. When we went to the Pleasanton Games today, we decided we'd try out their whiskey tasting. Now, the one that we went to previously at the last...
Okay, it was like a class.
Yeah, it was more of a class. Now, they did offer a class.
They did.
But... they had what was called Whiskey Live.
Which is pretty
amazing. Which was, like, my favorite thing in the world. Do ever. I like whiskey? No. But I loved the atmosphere. I tried it a lot.
It was
pretty
nice.
But I loved
nice.
The atmosphere, because instead of having a teacher in the front kind of telling you and helping you through the tastings, they had, like, 20 different representatives from actual distilleries. And each of these tables had like three or four of the different whiskeys that they make and manufacture and sell from their distillery, and you could go from table to table and try all of their different things, and they had some really expensive ones too, like 15, ooh, 18,
and they actually had
olds.
Some reasonable. We did not buy any, but we were told about, there was one that was really not sickly sweet, but rather good, sweet-ish, but not peaty, mossy, ashy, or smoky, as I say. But it was pretty darn reasonable. I think he said 32 a bottle. And then there was a really, really nice one that was like, I don't know, it was like a little bit sweeter. And it was like, oh, I'm like, oh, what about this one? He's like, yeah, that's about 130. And we're like, yeah, okay, great. Well, we'll have a taste. It was interesting.
But what was nice about it is that not only did it was just this room with all the tables and the distilleries, but it was just so social. Like, it was, like, the classroom, you're all kind of sitting at the table, and they're all just seated in front of you, and you try the six they give you. But this was like, oh, no. I have my 7 vouchers, I can go to whatever table I want to.
And I had 12 vouchers.
And try, and we had to give them away at the end.
We had to give them away, because a combination of just not...
Well, I was hearing later that if you, the girls were getting more pours than the boys.
Oh, I believe it. I mean, come on, at bars, things happen too. So I would believe that. But also sometimes, because some presenters or some host there or whatever who had a table would be more assertive about saying, you know, either asking for your ticket or putting your thing out front, the ticket little box or bin out front. And sometimes, I mean, if we had our tickets ready, we would dump them in. But sometimes, you know, your tickets are in your pocket and you're holding out your glass because you used one glass basically over and over for whiskey. And you would just say, hey, and they were just like free pouring through like, you know, 5 people in front of them, and they'd go to the next bunch. Neither of you stopped to think, let me give you a ticket, because there were so many people and you're just trying to go and get all this goodness. And so a combination of so much that we did, for us forgetting, them forgetting, we definitely gave away a lot of tickets. Sorry, we used a lot of tickets properly. But between us, I mean, there were 3 of us, and we had 7 and 7 and 12. What is that? 19. Between 20
and 14. 26.
So we had 26 tickets, and we gave away, like, I don't know, 9, 8 total?
Oh, I had 3 left over.
So maybe not that many.
And you had, like, maybe 6.
I had, like, 5, I think. 5 or 6. But it was so interesting. And they had non-whiskey stuff there. I mean, if you're going to go for something like this and pay for it, but you, well... Summer doesn't like whiskey, and she still had a good time, so go for it.
Well, here's what I will say, is there was, and I guess I wasn't really going to do this, but I wanted to give a little tiny shout-out to the Krabby's alcoholic ginger beer.
That was the best ever.
It was so delightful and refreshing to have that after punishing myself with several shots of whiskey. That it was so light and refreshing, and honestly, if you ever try it, it is dangerous because you cannot taste any alcohol in it. It was straight up delicious. So Krabby's, if you're listening, you can send me a case.
So I think we need to go on to our discussion, my dear.
To episode 104, entitled The Gathering. Okay, there were a couple of cameos in this episode.
Yeah.
And I want you to know that the first one, it took me like 2 viewings to find.
Who was this?
Ron Moore.
Yeah, because, I mean, sorry. Diana Gabaldon stuck out.
I was so focused. Well, because she had a name and words lines.
True. And the camera stopped on her.
Stopped on her several times. Like, she had several instances on screen. She was so adorable. That being said, I totally forgot that Ron Moore was going to be in this episode until the second time through. I was like, oh, that kind of looks like Ron Moore. And then I stopped it, rewound it, and I was like, Holy crap, that is Ron Moore. I'm an idiot.
So, from the top.
Yes, from the top.
Okay, so the first shot, the very first time I saw this, and it was like... Da, 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 da,
the
da,
same song, yeah.
Sorry, the same song. And just that shot when they're giving you the title and the people who wrote or whatever, and they have just the close-up of that, the brooch.
Yes.
With the Lucheo non oro. I was like, are you kidding me? And I was like, that's the Mackenzie motto.
Did
and
you pronounce it Lucio in the episode?
What did I say?
You said Lucheo.
Sorry.
This is not Italian. It's Latin.
Latin is actually like that as well. It depends. Classical Latin and medieval church Latin are different.
This is good, though. This is important. Not everybody knows this. I obviously didn't know it. I'm just pretty sure she said Lucio later in the episode.
Well, that's actually... Okay, that's a whole different... Lucio... that's kind of not even necessarily...
I just know for a fact she didn't say Lucio. I would. Well, she didn't say that either.
Here's a funny, fun little fact. I have a friend who's a classicist. She has her bachelor's...
Is that an official title?
It is. Medievalist, okay. Classicist.
All right, then.
I have a friend who's a classicist and has studied ancient Greek and Latin, classical Latin.
And on purpose?
Yes.
Okay.
And she told me... She was actually studying her Latin while I was studying medieval Latin when I was in Scotland. And we would email back and forth and we chatted. And she was telling me the pronunciations because I had learned the pronunciation of church Latin because in different choirs, you sing classic,
yes, that's true.
Not Holy Latin, but sacred text or whatever.
Yes.
From the medieval period up till now. And it's with a ch, the C followed by an E or an I is a ch. Anyway, she was telling me about how that famous line we all know from Caesar, who would actually be pronounced Kaiser, but whatever. The C is a hard C.
In Kaiser, Caesar.
Kaiser. Oh, no. That's a different show. although I love Kevin Spacey.
Right.
Okay. So, she was telling me this, you know that line that is very famous, Veni Vidi Vici. It's actually Veni Vidi Vici.
That's
classical Latin. Isn't that
there's no strength in that.
It sounds like Winnie Weenie. It just
yeah,
sounds,
there's no weenie
strength
in the middle
to it.
Of it.
Exactly. There's no
I'm sorry, but any phrase that you utter that has the word weenie in it, immediately.
Weenie.
Okay, like I said,
weenie.
It sounds like weenie.
Okay.
Any phrase that has the word weenie or sounding phrase weenie in it immediately loses.
Weedy weeky.
Like I said, loses all like
strength
to it.
At least manliness.
Right.
Okay, so when they had that Latin, I thought, oh my gosh, Lucheo non uro, the Mackenzie motto. And of course, Summer didn't probably say the same thing.
I did not.
And then you find out.
But I heard the fiddle, yeah. And I was like, how is that going to play in later? Because last week was very, very appropriate to have the harp come in because it was evocative of the bard.
So when we first see it, and you see, of course, there are all the candles in the room around it, I thought, oh, yes, we see a lot of candles, and there's a lot of candles during the gathering and all of that. Lucheo non uro.
I shine not burn.
I shine not burn.
Lucio.
The candles are burning. So I thought that was a nice little, probably reading too much. But again, I had a decent question for
it's
Diana.
It's true,
so
but here's
know.
What I'm going to say. A lot of the times that I think Ginger is going way too in detail about things and thinking way too in
crazy
depth about
deep.
Things... Every now and again, she turns it around, and Diana Gabaldon says, no, that's right, and you're the first person who's ever asked me that. So I'm trying to take everything she says now with a grain of salt. With a grain of Gabaldon salt.
So the guy in the tower, when she was, when they were out there playing tag,
no,
he looked like a young David Spade.
Okay, that's weird. I'm not going to agree with you on that, but what I will say is that this scene was definitely not from the books.
Yeah, it was
but
cool,
though. I thought it was a nice scene.
I thought it was pretty ingenious.
I did like it, and it gave you a lot of insight into how, where she is in her brain and how she's trying to escape and the thought she's put into it. Mm-hmm. Because in the books, she does state that she's been keeping an eye on the manse and everything and trying to figure out the best route of escape, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But we never see her playing with the children of Castle Leoch. So I enjoyed that. And you know
it was nice.
She's not anti-children. Like, she likes children. But you never really see that play out in the book. But I enjoyed it in this. Because we all know she wants kids. She and Frank would have loved to have had kids. But that just didn't happen.
So then fast forward to when they are ending the game of tag, and she basically goes in with Angus But, well, actually, oh no. God. When she first stops, she falls down like, oh, kiddos. And she falls down and Angus stands right there. And I have to let you know, I typed the word anus.
Of course you did.
No,
you
just one time.
Dirty whore.
Don't say those words.
Do not edit that out. It's hilarious.
It is not funny. So he basically gives Claire a show. And we've seen the clip before, right?
It was in We have seen previews. And that was the first time we confused Angus with Murta.
But remember, Murta, he can be funny, but he's very serious. He's not a jokester like
Murta's,
Angus.
So Murta's now not totally funny on purpose.
Exactly.
He's funny circumstantially.
I have no problem discerning one from the other now.
It's true, but as each episode happens, Angus has become more and more of a foil to Claire.
Yeah.
For me. Like, I feel he brings it upon himself because he's a little bit ridiculous, but I almost feel like she takes advantage of it. Like, I
oh
feel
my gosh,
like,
this whole episode is like, I almost feel sorry for Angus, like, because of the stuff.
And
that
I know
she's
I said that
him.
In the last episode that mm-hmm. I felt bad for him, but it's yeah. like I feel like with each successive episode, I feel a little more bit more bad for him just because. I mean, he's putting everything out there. He's Dougal's man. He's following her and doing his job, and she's just abusing him. But that's fine. It's her job. It's her job to abuse Angus.
So young Hamish accusingly tells Claire that she's lost her fichu. And I wrote, I wonder if young men, even of their class, their status, knew these words for ladies' clothing.
Well, I surely didn't. I just assumed.
I've seen it, Terry, talk about it. And other
apparently.
People.
I just assumed it was some sort of piece of her outfit.
It was. And her hair ribbon. And of course, I wrote, Claire is awfully negligent of her things, isn't she? I wrote, whining does not become Rupert. Mistress Beecham will miss the festivities. I was like, what a whiner.
But you know, that's kind of the feeling of the episode for them. That's kind of where they are. They're like, oh. Oh, you're ruining this great thing for us. We haven't had a festivities like this since I was a kid.
I want a piece of pie.
I want to play. Pie? Dirty. What? Is this like American
Hey, it
pie?
Comes back. Hey, a pie comes no, into this.
It does.
Unless I misheard.
No.
No. Yeah, pie is a little bit different. But so as she walks back toward the castle, we find out that Tag, as Summer has already alluded to, was a convenient way, and probably more than, probably more than one thing she did.
It was a highly intelligent way.
But it was definitely one of the ways for her to learn the layout
and
of the
grounds. And before they showed the scene of all of her quote-unquote breadcrumbs.
Yeah. That's what I thought. Breadcrumbs, what?
I know. But the minute that Hamish was like, you're so right. This is such a better place to explore than the castle grounds. I was like, oh, clever.
Very clever.
Clever, Claire. I will say that the one, okay, I always say one, but I don't mean one, but one of the
32.
Things, one of the things that almost annoyed me, but didn't really, because I'm really enjoying the show, was that,
I don't believe you.
Okay, listen, Claire has been described as having a glass face. Yeah. For her to be able to pull off all of these subterfuges, without
she has to
anybody,
basically not be around anybody.
Right, without anybody catching on is almost a little distracting to me because I'm like, wait, you're not supposed to be very good at lying.
Yeah.
But she's actually, in the show, very good at lying. That being said, not a huge, like, plot breaker.
Has it been said in the show yet that she has a glass face?
No.
Okay.
No, that's not something they're pushing at this point. It may come up later. I imagine that'll be something that comes from Jamie eventually.
I think
but
it is.
Right now, yeah. Right now we're just, you know, accepting what comes as it comes.
So we know from the title and from Rupert's wine that, not wine, whine, that there's a gathering about.
Yes. And I don't blame him.
Oh, no. Once every, like, 20-something years?
No, he must
This is like the fair and the, not the queen, but the fair and the queen and everything all wrapped up in one.
No, absolutely. And she is totally, like, crimping their style.
I would be a little
because she's like,
too.
Do what I want to do, and they have to because that's what Dougal told them to do. Follow this lady around, and mm-hmm. and she's not making it easy.
So basically, now my little note here said the pre-gathering. So
yes.
The next kind of few scenes are before the actual gathering takes place, or before the oath taking, I guess. So we see the people who have come to Leah for the gathering, and they set up camp around the castle grounds. And this would be the TV version or adaptation, correct me if I'm wrong, of the tents near the bridge. Remember that in the book?
Yes.
Yes, okay. I think I said in our episode when we talked about that, of the read-along, that it reminded me, Diana's description reminded me of, like, musicians and the tinkers and people down there. It just reminded me of, like, a medieval fair or something.
No, absolutely. And the only thing that I wrote about this particular scene was I've never seen so many people look so happy to be dirty. Like, Like, they were all dirty, and every last one but of them was, happy. Like, so happy. Yeah. Like, they just looked genuinely happy to be together. Like, and they said these people were just excited to be back together as a family. Mm-hmm. Like, these are, like, extended.
Totally extended family.
Never seen.
I mean,
seen
like, the biggest family reunion ever. They
were right. Haven't seen each other since they were kids. Happy to get together. Like Rupert said, they haven't done this since he was a bairn.
Yeah, and I think in the book it's, like, 20 or so years. And I love Claire's description, as Summer alluded to. She says it looked like they were full of simple joy. They
simple just joy at being joyful. Dirty. Dirty. Super dirty. I love it.
And as Claire tries to find a way to get her attendants off her back, when Rupert spies a woman looking at them, of course, Claire's like, don't look.
She
and he
mentions it first. He didn't look until she mentioned
but
it.
But then he looks and he says, well, I'll just be setting my cock to roost in there tonight.
Good God. Like, seriously? Keystone Cops. I keep saying that every week, Keystone but Cops, it's totally. So true.
And then, of course, when Claire has them draw sticks or draw straws, but using sticks, Rupert gets what he thinks is the good-sized one. And Angus says something like, and I could be off here. I listened a few times, and I think I'm close, if not right. It's all that wanking that gives you that much for you to have. And I thought, good gracious, that's... Apparently that was a lot.
Well, to be honest, though, when I saw that, the first piece she held up when it was the really long piece of straw, and then when Rupert pulled that really short piece, I was like, he can't possibly think that he pulled the long stick out of those two.
I guess he did.
Obviously he did, but I was like, she had so much more straw than that when they started that I couldn't believe that he was so excited to have pulled that little tiny piece.
Now, when Claire goes off to look for a mount, she mentions that she learned to ride while she and her Uncle Lamb lived in Ireland. Did we know this before?
No, I don't recall. Okay. I don't
It
recall
could be
any.
In those in like Diana's mind.
It could be, or could they be could in a bulge that hasn't been released that's true. Yet. It's
but
just
it's one of those things that's kind of nice
absolutely.
To know.
Absolutely. But what I did notice in this scene was the fact that they were in a completely different stable than they were in
previously. This one had like walls.
It had lots of walls.
Yeah.
It was more indicative of the stables that was mentioned in the books. In the books, it was a long
stone building
that had very few windows. Like, the windows were on either end. And this was straight out of the book for me. When we saw,
beautiful.
I know that when we saw the open air stables that they were in a couple weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
we all kind of went, I don't know how that's going to work, but it'll work if it works. But I was actually like, oh, okay, this is the stables more like the book. But then I was like, how many stables do they have?
Just 32.
All of them. They have
all 30, okay, maybe 33. They have all the stables. Sorry, I just got that. So do you know who else learned to ride? Learning to ride. You know who else did a lot of riding in Ireland in real life?
Not me.
Kaiserin Elisabeth von Österreich. So she goes to the stall. At the end of the scene with Rupert.
Oh, wait. Before you go to the end of the scene with Rupert,
mm-hmm.
when he introduces the horses, Brimstone.
Old Alec.
Yes, when old Alec introduces the horses,
Rupert's
Brimstone.
Rupert's not with her at that point.
Did I say Rupert?
Yeah.
I didn't mean Rupert. When
Start
old.
Over.
Okay. What I do want to say about that scene before you get to the end of it, when old Alec first introduces us to the horse as Brimstone, I want you to know that it took me 3 times to figure out what he was saying. Because she was like, oh, Brimstone, that's ominous. And he was like, and he said, oh, but la, 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 la. That's what I heard. Then the third time through, because I thought he said something, blah, 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 column. That's what I heard. But then the third time through, he was like, oh, it's like calling a tall person wee.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I get it now. But it took like 3 viewings.
And that actually happened at the end of what I was about to say.
Okay, then.
So at the end of the scene with Rupert, there is fiddle music. And the 40s music that starts just as Claire enters the stables. Again, an interesting choice. But the seamlessness of that transition was pretty awesome. The ending note of the fiddles sets the tonic for the 40s music that comes as she enters the stable. The 40s music starts on a perfect fourth below the tonic. So, again, very, very seamless.
Your nerd is showing.
And, as you said, old Alex shows her the beast.
The wee beastie.
And then he chats a little bit with her about Jamie, and old Alec is trying to warn Claire best to leave Jamie alone while the gathering's on.
He does that before he shows her the beastie.
I agree. That does happen before he shows her Brimstone. But he tells her, this is pretty much the only time he says straight out in this conversation that she should kind of leave off
Jamie. She shows up and she's like, well, if you don't want to help me, maybe Mr. McTavish can.
And he's like, no, you need to leave him alone. He's got other things going on today. And she's like, oh, am I bothering him? And he's like, no, that's not for me to say. But for right now, maybe perhaps you should leave him to his own thoughts.
So then the next scene's in the surgery, and this is another one that's not in the book, correct?
Well, she kind of wanders back to the surgery through lots of different areas, so I didn't know for sure that's where she was headed when it started. She was just kind of wandering the manse, if you will. And then all of a sudden it was like, bang, I'm in the surgery, and boom, Gellis is there.
Yes, but that's not in the books, is what I'm saying.
No, absolutely
okay.
It's not.
Okay, so she gets back to the surgery, and Gellis says that she has the port that Claire had asked for, and she's waiting for her there. And I liked seeing even more of the development of Gaelis's character. She notices the food. She right away asks Claire if she's pregnant. And then she keeps pushing it. Perhaps that's why you're so desperate to get to France. An illegitimate pregnancy. She just won't stop.
No, and but to be honest, I really enjoy the development of the friendship between the two of them.
I do.
I think that it adds more to the characters, and it'll probably mean more later.
Yes.
So that they've got more of a reason for the things that occur later. So I really enjoy seeing more of Gaelis and mm-hmm. kind of enjoying the way that they play off each other.
I think something I made a little note, but I just had an insight which may or may not be correct. So when she's asking her about her pregnancy, Claire automatically assumes, because Gaelis is not asking her anything. Did she say it? Yes, she did say illegitimate pregnancy, which is a little, you know, who knows?
Yes, well, because as far as Gaelis knows, if she is pregnant, it would be illegitimate because her husband is dead.
Well, she...
That's what Claire stated.
It's what... Yeah. So Claire immediately assumes that she's being accused of being unfaithful. And I thought, think about it, that's the exact same reaction she had to her husband in the 40s.
Well, it does. It's not an appreciated sentiment, no matter
her line of questioning.
It,
I understand that, but it was just
her husband.
But
or
it
Gaelis.
Was interesting that was her reaction both times.
Yeah.
So
she's nothing if not consistent.
And I wrote flashback to Mrs. Baird's. Anyone? And Gaelis says it's not unfaithful if he's dead, which, while true, is not quite smiled upon by those times.
No.
So it's interesting that she's kind of like even making allowances for it, like. Not just that it happens, but it's okay. If he's dead, you're okay, girl.
I mean, I have things to say, but they would be spoilery,
yeah.
So.
Shit. And Claire says he's not alive, her husband. And then Gaelis pushes back. Is he dead? Again, she's not rude about it. She keeps going.
She is, but Gaelis is still desperately trying to figure Claire out.
Oh, very much
and
so.
And Claire's keeping her cards close to her chest, but Gaelis is doing her best to find out as much as she can without, like, bothering Claire about it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Without making her aware of the fact that she is interrogating her.
Yes. And while I don't believe in this TV series that she's accepted she can go back to him, she's still planning to escape.
Well, she's still trying to
get
try.
Back. She wants to try.
I don't blame her. She should try.
She does finally decide to tell Gaelis, and this is the second person now that he's dead. Gaelis is a little bit too interesting. I just wrote that down. And maybe not, but I just thoughts. And I thought it was interesting that Gaelis opens up to her about her first coming to Kynesmere. Now, that's definitely not in the books, correct?
Mm-mm.
Not that depth. Mm-hmm. Not that much depth. This is something that
I mean,
like.
Though, to be honest, all of those things go through your head when you read the
absolutely.
Book.
Absolutely.
I mean,
you knew that she came
you
in.
You know that she's very intelligent.
Yeah.
You know that she's
married a man who's got station.
Who's so... But above her in station, perhaps, yeah. But so beneath her in, like, cutegory, which is what we say, but the cutegory. He's not in her cutegory. So he's definitely beneath her cutegory, but definitely she is beneath him in station.
Yep.
So you... And you can tell that from, like, the beginning of this, and that's in the book and that's in the show.
Mm. And Claire... Sorry. Gaelis can read Claire, though. When she says the Highlands are no place for a woman to be alone, you do well to remember that.
The thing about this whole scene is I feel like there were two conversations going on. The conversation that was out loud and the conversation that was going on in the underscoring of it.
Yes. Gaelis was trying to give her a warning.
Oh, the whole
flat
time.
Out.
It's like Gaelis is like, am I going to see you at the oath taking? And Claire's like, yes. And Gaelis is like, you're lying to me. But I need you to know that this is not a safe place to be. You're saying you're going to be there, and you're not planning on running off, which is what's indicated by all of your food stores and everything you have. packed up here. Everything that's going on in this room indicates to me that you're planning on trying to run. But this is not the place to be. And alone.
Claire tells Galus, promise. Meaning, promise I'll be there.
Right.
And Galus says, careful, promise is a serious thing in this country. I thought that was a very interesting line. It can be read on different levels. And one is, in general, you know, it's your word is your honor, that kind of thing. But the other one is, we really can't go into without spoiling, because it has to do with other places.
Right.
It is also interesting that Galus leaves. As she leaves, she's taking one of her apples and bitten into it as she walks out. And I thought, Eve, the first woman, tree of knowledge of good and evil, thou shalt be like gods, etc. It's just an interesting choice, and
I just thought...
It was pretty perfect. I just wonder if it was her choice in the script, or the director, or what.
I just thought... She just stole some of her food store.
See, that's funny. Poor
Claire is down one apple. She's going to have to go steal another.
You just stole one meal from her.
Exactly.
On the shot through the kitchen door as she is going to the kitchen.
Yes.
Out to see where Rupert is. He has that last that he wanted, that he got. She was sitting on his knee, on his lap, whatever.
She was all over
him.
But
he totally put his hand, you could see her leg. He was totally putting his hand up her leg. I was like, dang.
And that was right outside the kitchen. Decorum, y'all. Decorum.
This is a gathering. It's gone.
I guess.
Okay, the gathering.
What I want to say about that is that Diana Gabaldon's cameo was hard to miss. But,
yeah.
It's not the first cameo that you see. Mm-mm. The first cameo in the sequence of events was that of Ron Moore. Mm-hmm. But I will say that it took me at least two viewings to notice him.
It was pretty cool, though.
It was at least the second viewing when I was like, wait, isn't Ron Moore in this? And it was like, right as I thought that, I saw him. And I was like, dang it, how did I not see that the first time through? I think it's because he doesn't have any lines, so he's
and
not...
And the camera goes by so right, fast.
It's just, it does kind of focus on him briefly... And then it's like you see him, and then as Claire and Mrs. Fitz get closer, it focuses on them, and then they kind of follow them. But for that instance, he's very prominent. Yeah. But if you're not looking for him,
you won't see him. So, of course, Diana Gabaldon, cameo. The dress was beautiful, blue, and her delivery was very nice. And I thought her accent was pretty darn good. And I love... I wrote with a lot of R's. I love her. Bright the new Bern.
Dude, I loved it. The backhanded comment.
Mrs. Fitz. It was perfect.
Like, the sass that went on between the two of them was so perfect.
Yeah, it was.
So much sass.
I loved it.
Gown the last time you were at the last gathering. And you know, because of Rupert, that the last gathering
was at least 20 years ago.
Right, it's like 20 years ago.
Oh my goodness.
But and bully for that character for being able to fit into a gown that she owned 20 years ago.
That's true. Onto the beginning of the oath-taking, or Column's entrance, was... That was breathtaking.
Okay,
that
first was gorgeous. Of all, I know I'm going to say this every episode. Oh my god, his legs. Like, I think that they get worse with each episode, and I don't know if it's... I keep thinking I'm going to get used to them, and I don't. Like,
you don't see them all that much each episode. You just see a little bit of them, and so when you see them, you're just like, whoo!
I almost feel like they look worse. Like, they looked more twisted in this episode than previously.
Well, but... See, and I get... That's funny, because I definitely noticed his legs. You don't miss them, but I looked at his entire entrance. He was dressed... Impeccably.
Maybe I felt like in the first episode that I was like, oh, okay, he's got ruined legs. I'm going to move on and not stare at them. But with each successive episode, I stare at them a little bit more. And I'm like, oh, they look awful. That looks so painful. I know y'all are sick of me saying that. But that's what I think every time his poor legs come into scene.
I loved how Diana, or Iona, shushed Murta up there.
Funny. That was...
As you said, they gave her a few focuses.
She had some moments. It was nice. The one thing I did want to say about Colm was that I didn't realize how much that stark white beard aged him until they cut it off.
Yeah.
Like, he looked so significantly younger. And I know that when they released press photography about this, like, a while ago, I remember thinking, oh, that must be a flashback. But in fact, that was not a flashback. It was just him with his snowy white beard shaved.
Mm. And I thought the oath-taking was beautiful. Now, there's so much. We cannot obviously discuss every single thing.
Of course
not. Forever.
No.
But the oath-taking, I thought Dougal's was lovely. It was pretty much straight from the book. It was gorgeous. Book lovers have tons. So far, every single episode, book readers. I hope you're book lovers. Book readers have a lot to be thankful for, a lot to appreciate. And I love the back and forth between Claire and Angus regarding the port.
I thought it was clever that they were like mocking each other's accents.
And then when she basically gets him off her back, she goes back to her surgery, intending to grab her bag and then go to the stable and do what she needs to do and start her plan.
But again,
put her plan into action.
But I almost felt, again, I felt bad for Angus. Because she's only like, kind of enjoy this. And she's like, it's a sedative. And he goes, oh, is that Spanish?
Yeah.
But he's funny.
It was funny, but he's going to go probably get some, hopefully. And he'll be.
I don't know. He was really drunk.
He was a little bit drunk.
Like, really.
So then she's off to the surgery to get her stuff. And when she's just about to leave, she goes towards the door and, whoo, it's Leary. Definitely not in the book.
No, definitely.
But I really think that this will end up being an important scene. Because we know of some certain changes that they made. And that's because they took certain things out, they're putting certain things in. Or leading up to something that's going to happen in the future with other things. And this is, I believe, going to be an important scene. I wrote down, please do not forget this scene. Book readers will know that it was not in the books. But since we know some things have been excluded or even changed, this scene fits in very, very nicely.
This was right in there with her acknowledging the fact that people were calling her a miracle worker in the last week.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh.
This is
going
to come back and bite her so hard. Like, so hard. And, yeah. I mean, it was clever what she decided to do to give her, a vial of horse dung. Because, yeah, you're right. If you go and
hurt anybody.
If you go and sprinkle it on his threshold, which is the effing stables, yeah, he's not going to notice the smell of horse
exactly.
dung.
Exactly.
That being said, I thought it was clever with the whole Wizard of Oz reference.
Yeah.
I did go back on Google, in your honor, and the Wizard of Oz movie was released in 1939. So this is definitely of the right era.
Yes. And we already know that Leary is in love with Jamie, but this scene really does humanize Leary, I think. Not that she's not human in the first three episodes, or second two. As you can see that she really truly is wanting him to love her or at least feel for her the way she feels for him. And I think this does a good job making her a sympathetic character at this point.
I was sympathetic for her last week.
Yeah, continuing to make her sympathetic.
Now that she's trying to go through witchcraft to earn somebody's love, I'm a little less sympathetic.
Well, what surprises me is not Leary's request. It's the fact that Claire gives her something. The whole thing about the miracle worker, she was trying to save a life. She had no control that someone was going to call her that, and she would take a chance of being called that save a life.
She had
control
over that.
She did not have to do this.
No, she didn't.
But I understand she felt for the last.
I get
but still.
It, but like I said, I get why she did it, but at the same time, I thought, oh, Claire, this is going to totally bite you in the ass.
In the booty. And then, when Leary finally leaves, she goes to put her plan into action. And she runs into those drunken men in the hallway, outside the kitchen.
But this was totally out of sequence from the books.
Yes.
But it still worked in the sense that they used it.
Mm-hmm.
Out of sequence, yes. Worked, absolutely.
Yes. I loved all the garlic. And I thought, in the book, didn't Dougal, he did say the thing about the penalty, right? You're being here, there's a penalty to pay. And he kisses her, and I think there may even be tongue involved.
From what I understand,
but he did not go up her skirts.
No.
That's new.
No, from the books, the way that I read it was that he kissed her.
Yes.
And then afterwards told her, away with you unless you want to pay a higher penalty.
And then she left.
And she left. But also, the other thing in the book was that she didn't fight him. Like, she herself was in her cups.
Yeah.
She was more shocked by it, and so it just kind of happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was like, "Now away with you before you pay a higher penance."
Mm-hmm.
But this, in the course of the show, almost seemed like he was trying to get under her skirts, which was a little more than was indicated in the books. But that being said, I still think the scene worked.
Oh, it definitely works. All of it does, and because Dougal does save her from probably being raped
by three men.
By three men instead of just himself.
Just himself.
And then she saves herself. Right. Basically. I mean, he does come off of her. Because if he wanted to force her, he could have. That's all. That's the truth. But then she knocks him over the head with the stool and breaks it, and then she's off to the stable.
Okay,
and
can I say one thing about that scene?
The head over the head thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A, ew, they were peeing in the corridor?
Yeah.
Gross. And B, random stool.
Just that was a random stool.
Just a stool hanging out in the corridor.
It's like a little milking stool.
And that a-hole was peeing in the middle of the hallway. Like, if I had a party and there was some guy standing in my hallway pissing on the floor, I would be so upset.
But you don't have straw on your stone floor hallway.
Maybe not, but I guarantee you the next day I would know somebody peed on my carpet.
Of course you would. So on to the stable.
Yes.
I wrote, OMG, they kept the stable. Not the actual the scene.
No, the whole...
So this, perfect.
No, this whole scene was so perfect.
It was spot on perfect. I wrote, yes! So as she trips and falls over Jamie's prone form and he pulls a knife on her, she lets out another wonderful JHRC.
No, I think she's getting better with these.
Yes.
I think that with each successive
she's getting better.
She's getting so much better.
That's what I wrote. Perhaps she needs to be threatened to do so. The one in the mirror and the one when Jamie's fallen off his horse and she's doing his bandage, not her favorites. But ever since episode 3, which is only one episode ago, she's been nailing it, getting it better and perfect for the actual thing that has happened. But the circumstances were completely different. It makes me think that if she's threatened or scared or really surprised as opposed to annoyed, she does better. So the whole stable scene is perfect. And we love her JHRCs. So I like the entire scene. There are too many things to write, just way too many things. I just love, love, love the whole thing. And there's, of course, you see more interaction, more character development for both of them.
He's playing him so well.
He is.
Because when she was like instantaneously like, I've been telling you I've been wanting to leave for a while now. Mm-hmm. And you've been calling me a sassenach and an outlander. And he was like, oh my God,
I'm so sorry.
So sorry if I offended you. I was like, he likes her.
Oh, he totally. Likes her. You can see it.
You know what? He does. But when I read it the first time, even knowing where it goes in the fourth book, I didn't read any of that.
In the fourth book?
Yeah, because I started reading with the fourth book. Welcome back to the story of our podcast.
No, I thought I didn't hear you saying started in the fourth book as you started the entire series in the fourth book. I thought, as you read 1 through 3 and then you started number 4, how does this, anything we're talking about now have to do with 4?
Okay, I got it. My point is knowing where the fourth book is and where they are in the fourth book and knowing how they develop, I still didn't catch that from this early on in the book. So for me, I was like, oh, it's like such it's a gimme. Sweet. It was so nice. Yeah. And I'm like, I get it now. And maybe that's because I wasn't expecting him to have delivered it like that. So I'm enjoying the things that he's finding when he's recreating this character.
Yes, and she's talking about how my plan has been foiled. You've known I wanted to leave for weeks now. And he talks about, let's get you back to the castle. I'll take you there. And she's like, I don't think I can go back.
She's
and
like,
then
I
she
can't.
Explains what happens. And she's like, I may have wallowed him over the head with a chair or something.
Or something.
We've all said things like that. That's so perfect.
But before
and I'm
that,
thinking that's so modern of her.
It's true. She's so modern, though, for her time. But it was funny
for that
because
time.
He says, she was like, oh, well, these men tried to accost me. And he was like, did they touch you? And she's like, well, they tried, but, you know, then Dougal showed up and
all that.
This, that, and the other. So it was, I almost felt bad for her trying to recount this whole scene, but she's like, no, we can't go back because I did kind of brain your uncle over the head with a stool. And he's like, was he drunk? And she says, yes. And he goes, oh, well, he's not likely to remember it. And I doubt he's going to let people know that he let some lassie get the better of him. So
yeah.
She's probably safe.
When Jamie is kind of apologizing for saying, you know, oh, I'm sorry if I hurt your feelings or whatever like that, his laugh when he does this, his laugh is very light with her and it's very musical. It's very sweet. And as you said, I wrote, it's a promise of things to come. Meow.
It is. Meow.
Well,
but
it wasn't
I also
very cat-like,
wrote, what I wrote was, because this is really the first time we've seen Jamie in this episode.
Yeah.
And what I wrote
pretty
was,
much.
Sam is so effing charming.
Very much.
So charming.
Very much so.
Like, for instance, if he showed up in my lifetime and he was like an a-hole and then he acted like this, I'd be like, I don't care.
Yes, please.
Yes, please. I'll have another.
And so Claire thanks, he says, okay, well, you know, still, we got to get you back to the castle. And Claire thanks him for accompanying her back to the castle, and he says, no, lass, it's me who should be thanking you for all the healing of my scratches. Yeah, because that's what you had, Jamie, scratches.
Right.
And I know he's joking, but
no.
So then they're accosted.
But that's Jamie, though, to make
he's
every
joker.
Make light of everything.
Exactly,
and
exactly. Especially when it has to do with him.
Right.
Not
Jamie's
so much
the
others,
type of
but
person
himself.
to me that I've noticed who likes to make everyone else feel comfortable.
Absolutely.
So him calling it
and not worry about him.
Absolutely. Like he's the least of everyone's worries. He wants to be the least of everyone's worries is how I read him.
I think so. If you don't already think or know that Jamie has some kind of feeling for the Sassenach wench, hopefully this scene will have begun to clue you in. Yes, he protects her and wants to protect her, as he would for probably, like he did with Leary. He would do that for any woman, probably. But, I mean, he headbutts the young man who's holding her after they're accosted.
But it wasn't just that he was holding her. It was that he was like, can I keep the lassie then? I mean, it was like, well, no, it wasn't just, I want to hold her, I'm holding her. It was the, like, it was the implication that I'm going to keep her and do with her what I want. And do what I want
to. But after he headbutts him, and then he goes to her and he says, are you all right? I mean, he's so concerned.
I mean, I think, okay, this obviously is not 100% from the book. And he was, and obviously, because I read it, he was not this openly concerned for her welfare in the books.
Weren't they just, like, basically caught in the books and taken back? He wasn't, like, beaten, hit over the head, was he?
He definitely was restrained.
Yeah, but not beaten over the head and knocked out.
I don't think that he was knocked out, but he was definitely restrained, like, significantly restrained to the effect that...
Well, they forced him back.
They did say, we didn't want you to maim everyone while you made that decision. I don't think that was a new statement.
No.
But I don't think that his concern for Claire was this clear in the book, but it's important in the course of the series to lay the groundwork for this relationship. Just wait
for episode... Well, it's a few episodes away, but it's coming, people. It's a coming. So, Jamie, when they're taking him up there and they're chained... He's changing. He conveniently changes with his back to a corner, obviously, so his scars can be hidden.
Also conveniently, there was a camera right behind his back.
Well, Sarah, it is television.
I know, I'm just saying. It was behind him, but we did get reminded of the scars.
I thought, actually, his Je Suis Prêt was okay.
It was better than his How to Speak Outlander.
Yes, it was.
Because the How to Speak Outlander
was good.
Was Pouet, and this one was much more Prêt.
No, it wasn't quite that.
It was, but it was. I could hear it. If I listened for it, I could hear that it was much less Pouet and more Prêt.
It was 90% less of the first. But there was no... the R was not far back enough. But it was 100% better and was definitely not by the lips. That's what I'm saying. It was much better. I liked it.
All I will say is that it did not sound like the How to Speak Outlander.
Agreed, 100%.
The How to Speak Outlander was very clearly Pue. And this time around, it sounded much more like the Pré.
I would say...
Much more Pré than Pue.
I would say it sounded more like Pré. Which I know, but see, mine is softer than yours.
The non-linguist people are going to be like, they all sound the same.
Oh, well, not your two. Mine and your second, maybe. But anyway, so Jamie then appears for the oath-taking, and he appears front and center, and the camera loves him, the camera has him, and of course, I know it's all planned, it's all staged, it's all blocked, but he stands there like a Greek god entering this area.
That's his job.
I wrote, lovely. And Claire asks Myrta, why is everyone so tense? And I wrote, Wenchy Poo, we love you, but you get yourself and others in heaps of trouble.
Well, the thing is had she been paying attention since the stables when old Alec told her to leave him alone, she would have known that there was something much larger at stake than just oath-taking.
And to be fair, she did not go looking for Jamie. But no. her plan ruined his plan. His plan was to stay away.
Or his position ruined her plan. I mean, it was all one and the other.
So she's like, what's going on? Why is it so tense? Blah, blah, blah. And Myrta is trying to tell her. He's like, come here and I'll tell you. And she's like, but what? He's like, no, come here and tell you.
But have you noticed that in the course of the episode, like when they shushed each other, the shh sounded very different than the way that you and I would shh. It was almost like a shht. Their shush didn't sound like you and me going shh. It sounded like a shht.
Ah, yeah, maybe like a T at the end, like a shht. So Myrta tells her that the clans are Tanist, and I thought, am I hearing this correctly? And I actually just faked like I knew how to spell something. I spelled it like it sounded, but I was wrong, and then I found the right one. And actually, I looked it up. Of course I did. According to Encyclopedia Britannica, and we'll quote the whole thing and give the link. It's a much longer definition, and they give examples, which I will not say here. But according to Encyclopedia Britannica, The entry is for tanistry. It's a custom among various Celtic tribes by which the king or chief of the clan was elected by family heads in full assembly. And this is what's interesting, Summer. Listen to this. He held office for life and was required by custom to be of full age, in possession of all his faculties, and without any remarkable blemish of mind or body. So, maybe they're only partly tannist.
Well, here's the thing. They're tannist, but what made it work was that Dougal was
his
fully committed to being the person that made it work.
That's true.
If they had not worked together as well as they did, Colum would never have been there. The Laird.
I agree. So Murtagh explains why Jamie...
I mean, that's indicative of the brotherly relationship they had.
Yeah. So Murtagh explains to her why he can't take the oath and why he must take the oath. And I'm like, gee, that clears things up.
And then my favorite is when she's like, regardless of what's going to happen, he's going to be killed. And this is all my fault. And he's like, yes, it is.
Yep, he agrees, it is. And as soon as the mood... Okay, then Jamie gives his little speech, you know, his thing, which is, I didn't check to see if it was verbatim from the book, but it was very similar. The reasons were similar.
But what I will say before you go into what was said in and out of the book was that I loved the look on his face.
Jamie's?
When you saw him make that decision, yeah.
To say something.
Yeah, because when he went down into the kneel position, he kind of had an unsure look on his face.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And then he all of a sudden went,
gotta do
F it, I'm doing this. And then he stood up and he was like, yo, I am not going to make my fealty oath to you because I belong to somebody else.
So after he gave his oath, or his speech...
He didn't give an oath.
No, he gave a speech. As soon as the mood lifted when Colum offered Jamie the quay, the sound of a flute played. And I wrote, again, so pretty, in the major key. And I laughed, and Murtagh tells Jamie as he comes over to him, I'm getting too old for this.
He did, but before that happened, I almost felt like... Dougal looked disappointed he wasn't going to be able to kill Jamie.
Or something, yeah.
Like, he looked like, ugh, all this buildup and I don't get to kill anyone.
Okay, think about it. So, up till now, Dougal has harassed Claire. Not gotten... So, sexual frustration, sexual tension. Has not gotten to kill Jamie. So that's two things that he's a little bit, you know, a little bit nuts about.
It'll come back later in this episode.
Well, yeah, it comes to a head. Something does.
A fruition, if you will.
So, as they're in the next scene or scenes, they're preparing for the Tinchel. And it's a little bit of 40s music again. I'll take it out then. So it's very interesting how they did the Tinchel. I love the light. Just the light coming through. I mean, not that they planned it, but just the light coming through the trees. And it was beautiful. And then the fog or the mist... And I wrote, were those real pigs? I don't mean the dead ones. I mean the live ones. I don't think they were CGI.
No, they were real. They did look sparkly or kind of weird. Straight up like pigs. I mean, you can rent them.
I guess. You can rent them?
You can rent pigs.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, do they have domesticated wild-looking pigs like that?
Absolutely.
They can rein in?
Absolutely.
With boar teeth?
Yes.
You seen them?
Ginger.
Any animal that you can see, I promise you,
they're not CGI.
Someone... has tamed at least one of them.
There were like 50 or 20.
There were not. There were like 3.
No.
There were not 20!
There was a scene with like at least 10.
Good lord, there were not that many.
There was more than 3 at one time.
All you need is one, and then you show it over and over from a different view.
It wasn't one at a different... It was all together running... There was more than one running in
the
scene.
There was more than one, but there was not 20.
Okay, and I came down to 10. It was about 9 or 10. So, there were a lot of boars. I don't remember there being 85 pigs in the book. I thought it was like, they're after one.
Well, you're always after one.
No,
you always,
but I thought
like,
there was literally after one
out.
But they didn't.
Well, pigs and generally run in packs.
So,
don't they?
I was curious. Well, let's see if you're right. I was looking for, like, a group of kittens is called a kindle. A group of...
Kittens is called a kindle?
Yes. Isn't that adorable? It's the best thing
and
ever.
I love my kindle. I didn't know it had anything
to
do with cats.
Cats came first before the kindle did, my dear.
I guess. So I looked up on this website what you would call a group of pigs. And it's actually called, a group of boars specifically is called a singular.
That's dumb.
And then you hear the Geordie scream.
Well, no, you don't hear the Geordie scream. What you hear is the first dude go down and Claire is like... angrily patching him up. I thought it was funny that Claire was doctoring this man. It's her job, and she was very angry about it.
Because she didn't like the whole thing of the hunt, I think.
I suppose. But people have to eat. I mean...
Well, and this time you gotta find your food.
Yeah, and I mean, but she was just... She always seemed so put out by doctoring people. Like, how dare you get... How dare you get injured?
Well, especially since these kinds of... That was totally...
Avoidable?
Yeah. It was a hunt for, like, a festivity. So they still would have eaten the food. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't necessarily because we need to find our food for the next month or whatever.
No, it was definitely an organized event. But still.
So just about as she's finishing doctoring that boy, should we hear the Geordi scream?
Yes.
And it wasn't like, it wasn't as blood-curdling or whatever as I would have imagined. It was a painful scream.
I mean, but it was jarring. It was definitely noticeable.
As she tries to get to it, she kind of, you know, that scene where she's running, turning around and looking and...
Well, the boar attacks her. If it weren't for Dougal...
Well, it was about to attack her, yeah.
Yes.
He's, like, coming down on her.
Yes.
So she's running around trying to find out. She hears the boar, she kind of freaks out, and then, of course, she's saved by Dougal. But I wrote... Claire Katrina does a very good heaving, gasping, breathy noise. It's the same thing we heard when she was being attacked after Randall.
Absolutely.
And,
by the way, we haven't seen Randall in a couple of episodes. I imagine he's coming up soon.
Oh, big time.
Big time and in a big, giant a-hole fashion.
As always. So I appreciated the realistic look of the abdominal wound. I wrote, it was messy,
but... That grossed me the F out.
I didn't enjoy saying, oh, yummer, but I looked... I liked... No, I didn't like it. It was nice. I mean, they did a good job.
No, it's not nice.
They did a good job with it.
What I liked about the scene was that they showed the leg scene. She's like, no, you're not going to lose your leg.
And then, boom.
But your intestines are hanging out of your body. You're probably not going to notice that you didn't have to cut your leg off.
At first I thought, wait, did they change the storyline? He's fine. Oh, that.
I was like, oh. Okay, side story. My friend has, you know, a theater person who lives in, like, Savannah. And he was buying things for a film set, a film shoot. And he needed to buy stuff to give the impression of, like, intestines.
Oh.
And apparently, if you buy condoms and fill them with whatever you fill them with, they can give the look of intestines. Okay. And he had this quote that made us laugh for days. It was like, your intestines are so much more than, like, 30 condoms. It was like intestines in relation to condoms. And I was like, ah.
That's kind of gross.
It was silly.
Did Dougal undo his, like, in the book?
He certainly did. Oh, yeah.
No, in the book. Okay.
I think so.
He was trying to give him a better death.
He looks to her and he basically says, you know, can he live through this?
Yeah.
And she's like, no. And then he's kind of like, let's
just let him
call it then.
Yeah. And the line that got me, the only time in this episode, you know, except for the beginning when I saw the brooch, I was like, oh my gosh. But the first time I saw it. But the line that got me every single time is when Geordi says, Dougal, are you there, man? Oh, that just, that was,
okay.
Brian Larkin did a very good job.
But not from the books. When Geordi goes, you have to tell me, Dougal. Did you sleep with my sister?
That was beautiful. That was awesome.
I mean, if
and Dougal's like, yes, I did.
And I loved, she was I loved that moment because if you're going to ask somebody that kind of a question, there's no better time to ask it because you're going to get the right answer.
Well, you're going to get, hopefully you're going to get the truth.
Which is the right answer.
It's the truth.
Which is, in my opinion, the right answer.
Well, the right answer is,
I don't want to feel better. I want to know the truth.
That's exactly right.
Which is where he is, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
He's like, you know, Dougal, you and I both know I'm kicking it. Like, I'm bleeding out through my leg, even though my intestines are hanging out into my crotch. That being said, because we both know I'm dying, you need to tell me right now, because you wouldn't have told me this in any other way.
Did you have sex with my sister?
So I thought that was such a little bit of comic relief in an otherwise awkward scene. And the other thing about this scene was that, for me, it was like this first moment of intimacy between Claire and Dougal.
Well, what? After he tries to kiss her? That's intimacy?
No, it wasn't. This moment between the two of them, it was like, I felt that those two characters connected on a level that they never would have in any other way during this shared moment of helping this Klansman pass on. And I even wrote down, I was like, it's awkward that I'm writing that this is an intimate moment, but it was. It was so intimate, and I felt like
I felt like they so were connected with each other in this shared goal of mm-hmm. of helping this this of helping this character pass on. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was lovely. I thought it was a very lovely scene, and I thought that I almost felt for the first time that Dougal and Claire really saw each other.
And you could tell, well, Claire's goal was still to get the heck out of Dodge. So she is, and he just accosted her and tried to fill her up or rape her or something the night before, or a few times before, a few days before. But it meant so much to him. I'm sure she would agree that an intimate kind of moment, but it meant so much to him that he came to seek her out. Now, granted, he had other stuff to tell her about, but it was enough for him to say, look, you can handle yourself.
No, it was. And I think it was a moment of begrudging respect for both of them. Like, she wants to dislike him, and he wants to dislike her and not trust her. And I think that in this moment, they were like, we have to let all of that go because you and I are working towards this shared goal mm-hmm. of aiding a kinsman. And I think that when he saw her just totally drop all of her side interests and mm-hmm. basically just focus on that moment at hand, he's like, you and I have more in common than I thought. Mm-hmm. Which could work against her later on. But
well, could definitely.
Absolutely. But I thought it was such an intimate, nice moment between the two of them, even though Jordy had to suffer because of it. But going into that, the first thing I wrote when I heard Jordy's scream was, alas, poor Jordy, we barely knew thee. Mm.
So after the Jordy scene, they're coming back towards Leoch, and they come up on Gema Shinty. This is another added scene, correct?
Oh, yeah.
And another great one. And Dougal is like, look, I just had a good friend die. I just got almost, not quite ripped a new one, but I just got hit over the head last night by this woman I tried to get on.
But I won't admit that to anyone.
No, never. And so he's like, and who's down there? Jamie's down there. I'm getting my game on.
I feel like in that scene, A, he had steam to blow off. Yeah. B, he was still mad at Jamie for getting in that line exactly. before, and he really looked like he wanted to have hurt an excuse him. To hurt him the
absolutely.
Before. So I feel like he's going, I have the perfect excuse to cause a little damage, to blow off some steam, and to be really masculine right now.
Yep, and he did want to hurt people. Maybe not intentionally, like, scar them for life, but he wanted to get stuff out and hurt someone else because, by God, he had lost a good friend. He wanted to hurt something, hurt someone, and help his pride, all of that.
But I also wondered if maybe he was showing off for Claire. If both of them
I didn't think about that, but I don't know about Jamie. Jamie, maybe once he realized Dougal was there and they were playing with each other or whatever, but Jamie was there and he knew Claire was not there. So I don't think Jamie was until maybe he saw that she was there or realized she was there once he saw Dougal. Dougal, on the other hand, very, very possible. Very, very possible. And I wrote, I never knew Shinty was so dangerous.
No, and you know what?
Dang.
Okay, for the record, we are going to some Highland games very shortly, and I intend to catch some Shinty games. And if they don't, like, turn the Shinty into an effing sword fight, I'm going to be disappointed.
Because Stars has ruined us.
They have ruined me for Shinty. Shinty for me should be a little bit of sword fighting now, and maybe somebody randomly walking up behind somebody else and knocking them in the crotch with their with their mallet. But if it's not almost rugby with a mallet, I'm going to be a little upset.
Oh, no, I'm just going to be disappointed if they don't have Jamie and Dougal there. Because to me, that is Shinty.
Dude, you're going to be so disappointed.
Forever.
I'm going to put that out there.
Forever.
Now, for me, Shinty, before I'd seen this episode, was just a lot like field hockey.
Pretty much.
But having seen this episode, it was like rugby combined with field hockey.
Oh my goodness. Combined with fencing.
Right.
Except angry fencing that you don't say, oh god, you just go boom.
No, and when Dougal knocked him down the second time, Jamie was like, that's the second time you've caught me napping.
Yeah.
And he's like, this is done.
Dougal says at one point, yield. And he says, what would you think of me if I did? And he says, not much. So they're going back and forth. So the game ends. He stomps off. Jamie kind of gets the better of him.
Well, Jamie throws him over his effing shoulder.
Over his shoulder, yeah.
Like, big time.
And then he stomps off. And then we go to the next scene, is in Claire's surgery again, and Dougal is coming to visit Claire. She's like, what is it now? What do you want?
Well, and he immediately is like, you know, I want to thank you.
Oh, yeah.
For what he you did her, yesterday. And she's like, what the F did I do? I didn't do anything. I just sat there.
Yeah. Because for her, all she could see was this one more life she didn't save. But for him, he was like, you gave him comfort in a moment where there was nothing else you could give him.
Mm-hmm. And when Dougal tells her that he's going to be going on the road and tells her why, and he says he wants her to go with him, or she will be going with him.
Well, because he says you've seen death.
Yes. And you've seen And he also it. Wants to give her a little bit of freedom, supposedly. Right.
He's like, I think that you could come in handy because you've experienced violent death.
And you can handle yourself around stuff. Think about it. He didn't say this, but he handled herself with him in the hallway.
Yeah.
She still would not maybe have overcome three men, but she was getting the guys who were there.
I mean, she got one of them really good in the crotch before.
So
she
I think he has respect for her as not a fighter, but as a woman who can stand up for herself.
Yeah.
For a bit, and definitely she got the better of him.
I mean, he won't admit it, but no. She did get the better of him.
And so when he tells her why he's going on the road, he says the line, and attending a wee bit of business here and there, he totally looks away from her. Totally.
No, of course not. Because we all, okay, us book readers know that bit of business is nothing related to Leok.
And nothing related to rents. It has to do with money.
It has to do with money and using Jamie in a way that is not something Jamie would be happy with.
Yeah.
But that's all you can say. Enjoy all
So he totally, and I wrote, I wonder what business that is. Dougal.
I'm not wondering. I know exactly what it is.
So he does say he's recognized that she can handle herself. Ish, like she's seen death, violent death.
Yes.
And she can handle herself. But he does tell her that he thinks it would be wise to have a healer along. That's it's his true. Reason.
But that being Collecting said, rent, if it just that's, sounds odd. If that's the sole reason, I'm like, how bloodied is your rent collecting?
You owe me $1,000, whatever.
Like, how many people, go against you when you show up for your
rent?
They
try to murder you when you're trying to do this? Like,
that's aggressive.
And then it goes basically to the next scene is them riding away from the castle.
First light. He's like, first light, show up for dinner tonight, and first light will be ready to go. And they show the party kind of leaving.
And I love her outfit with the white.
Okay, but what I'll say about that outfit is how impractical I thought that outfit was.
Yeah. For because the road.
Given the fact that Angus is constantly covered in dirt and or mud, I'm like, the white fur of her outfit and the white gloves, I'm like, she will look so dirty within 5 minutes of leaving Castle Leok. Is it a beautiful outfit? Yeah. Absolutely. Is that white fur beautiful? Yes. But realistically, it would be covered in
beep.
Very shortly.
That'll be bleeped. But it's the movies.
Absolutely.
Or the TVs.
But that's all I thought. When I saw her riding off, oh, and I also looked in all those groupings for Ned McGowan, and I'm fairly sure he's the last dude in the Tricorn.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So, if I'm right, it's the dude in the Tricorn.
I think so.
Tricorn means three-cornered hat.
Well, it literally means three horns, but on a hat, it's three points, yeah. So, what does Claire plan? There's a ton of voiceover as they leave. Her voiceover.
Obviously, she
and
plans
like,
to try to
her
find her way back to
her final words are basically, I must not fail. And of course, that means to get away.
Her final words are the same final words
Every
she's
episode.
Had for the last couple of episodes,
yeah.
which
Since
is,
she got
I,
through
need,
the stones.
I need to go back to Frank. Which, you know, given the fact that I'm becoming more enamored with Tobias Menzies with
Not such a bad thing.
Episode.
Except
I don't blame
except
her.
Except that we want the next 7 books, so
I don't,
she does need to stay with Jamie.
I don't blame her, but
Summer,
Sam
she
Hewen,
needs to stay back with Jamie.
Dude, I don't blame her, but Sam Hewen is still, the most charming piece of ass in the 1740s.
Wow.
I mean it.
Because she was back there, and she can tell you that for
Good
scientific
Lord! Okay, and like I said earlier, the first half of the episode, you didn't even see Jamie, but the second he showed up, I was like,
he's so charming!
Oh, very much so.
Oh my gosh. We already liked him as an actor from what little we've seen. We loved him as Jamie in anything we'd seen, but the more that we see him as Jamie, it's like, seriously? Seriously,
look,
can this get any better? And the answer is,
he is playing Jamie with such finesse.
Yeah.
And I've read some articles where, you know, he was talking about auditioning for all those different Game of Thrones parts and not getting them. And he felt like this part was different.
Mm-hmm.
This part, he felt like he knew more of the character and this character was more in his wheelhouse. And it was. I honestly think this
he was made for this role. And mm-hmm. I never thought I'd ever say that about any actor playing Jamie Frazier.
Yeah, because that's
been in my head for a very long time.
Yeah,
but
a long time.
Good God, he's got it.
And we haven't seen, as of yet, anything kind of clips for episode 5.
No.
Which is good, I think.
We'll see.
But we know it's...
It's coming.
Is the rent or something like that? It's about... They go to collect
the rent. Yeah, absolutely.
But, oh my goodness, we're just... We have been looking forward to them getting out of the castle, period, because...
Yeah. Well, the thing is the reason we look forward to them going out of the castle isn't because they're out of the castle, it's because of what it means. What
it means
for the story,
it
means they're moving
toward
stuff.
Towards stuff.
Because, you know, 23-year-old virgins need to not be virgins at some point.
Yeah,
come on, stars.
Maybe when they're 27.
Seriously, if I can watch an episode with my 6-year-old, you're not doing something right.
Well, it's not gratuitous.
No, it's not. Not
which I really, actually, really appreciate.
No, I am enjoying it because it's not. It's not Game of Thrones for the sake of being Game of Thrones.
Boobie, boobie.
It's just boobs for the sake of having boobs in the episode. I like the fact that they're not throwing it in there just to throw it in there.
Matter of fact, there was absolutely nothing this episode.
No, there wasn't. Like I said,
except
it's
that woman's thigh.
Like I said, this is probably the second episode in a row that I could have watched with my 6-year-old.
Except
I did
the
not.
First one did have boobs and butt.
Yeah, but, I mean, they didn't really show boobs and butt. It was, like, from the side.
But my point is...
It was, like, side boob. Side boob is infinitely less offensive.
Oh, there was nip.
You saw nip? You were obviously
yes.
paying way more attention than me.
She changed. She got into her skivvies.
I mean, I saw side boob, but...
Okay, anyway, we're not going to discuss, like, the differences between things.
Too
but absolutely.
Late.
The point is, there was zip-a-doodle in this episode.
But
unless you count Jamie's boobs.
No, it's true. But can I just say this about that? I'm so...
this about that? Go for it, Sarah.
Okay.
Tell us this about that.
I'm so glad that they aren't...
Of course.
...moving on. Because for me, that means that they literally are only... showing what is important to the storyline.
Mm-hmm.
Game of Thrones, a lot of times, I feel like it's just throwing boobs out, just throw boobs
and
out.
I haven't read it.
And they
so
add boobs into the scene.
There
just
are
to have
a lot
boobs.
Of, there are a lot of boobs.
Whereas with this series, I think that they're literally sticking to the books enough that they're showing the boobs when it's necessary to show boobs. But they're not just throwing boobs into an episode to titillate the audience.
No, they're showing, I mean, if someone's, like, changing, you kind of have to take stuff off to put stuff on.
No, but I like the realism of it.
That's what I just said.
It follows
yeah.
with the course of the episode. It's not just like, hey, we haven't shown boobs yet in the
mm-hmm.
last 20 minutes. Let's show boobs.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they're sticking enough to the story. And that being said, we're probably a couple more episodes if they stick to the story from being gratuitous to the point that I can't watch it with my 6-year-old.
Perhaps.
We'll see. But when you do show it, stars, let's go all the way.
Oh, they will. So I think that...
probably wraps up this episode.
Well, thank you as always so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at @outlanderpod. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/outlanderpod. Or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com.
I dreamt it last night that my young